The Blair Athol Hotel was berthed like a great decaying liner on the coast at Eastbourne. If it had flown as standard from one of its stained turrets, it would have been some raffish flag of convenience, flapping the disreputable colours of the Republic of Malpractice and Illegality. The front windows had a view of the carpet gardens and the pier, but the back of the hotel, where Miss Agnew lived, gave onto the drainpipes and portholes of another hotel and a row of dustbins where seagulls and starlings squabbled over the kitchen refuse. Miss Agnew, impelled by the vicissitudes of life to book a cabin on this voyage to nowhere, was one of the off-season tenants who occupied a room at a reduced rate at the top of the hotel, where the carpet had ended. After the third floor, the mismatched red and black and orange carpets gave way to cracked linoleum and, in places, bare boards. A terrifying lift, a sealed cage behind the temperamental iron zigzag door, carried them up to their lodgings, separated from each other by false plywood walls that divided what had once been one room into two compartments. One floor above them, huddled precariously like gulls, perched a colony of homeless families. They were placed there by the council in bed and breakfast accommodation, and their misery amply filled the pockets of the landlord and his manager. If, as Le Corbusier had said, a house was a machine for living in, the Blair Athol thought Miss Agnew was a machine for dying in. But at least there, unlike the residents of the many old people's rest homes in the town, they were doing it on their own terms. The residents of the fourth floor formed a little community in exile, rescuing each other when the lift stuck, knocking on the door if someone had not been seen about, braving doctors' receptionists in smelly telephone booths to beg for a home visit, but dreading above all an admission to hospital, from which one so seldom returned. They met in the conservatory at the back of the hotel in the evenings for a rubber of bridge or to watch a programme on a television whose horizontal hold had gone, and formed a little human bulwark against the sound of the sea and the approaching night. It did not do to think too much, Miss Agnew had decided, to dwell on people and cats and dogs and houses in the past, was to inspire one to board the next bus to Beachy Head. But sometimes she couldn't resist stopping to speak to a cat or a dog in the street, and the hard, furry head and soft ears under her hand evoked lost happiness so painfully that she strode away, berating herself for opening up to such pangs, her red mackintosh flapping like the wings of a scarlet ibis, startled into flight. She did not know why antagonism had flared up between herself and the manager, Mr. Metallius. She'd paid her rent on time, and she was surely no more bizarre than any of her fellow residents, than the Crosby twins, 70-year-old identical schoolboys who dressed on alternate days in beige and blue pullovers they knitted themselves, or than the transvestite, known as the Albanian, a smooth-haired shoe salesman who by night flitted from the hotel a gauzy, exotic moth to sip the secret nectar of the Eastbourne night. Or than Miss Fitzgerald, who left a trail of mothballs and worse in her wake and cruised the litter bins of the town and rifled the black plastic sacks her fellow tenants left outside their doors on dustbin day. Or than the Colonel, whose patriotism embraced British sherry, or than silent Mr. Cable, or Mrs. McConaughey. Miss Agnew thought that perhaps she reminded Mr. Metallius of some teacher who had humiliated him in front of the class, or a librarian who berated him for defacing a book. She'd followed both these professions in her time. But whatever the cause, she knew he did not like her. "Nothing today, Miss Agnew," he would call out as she passed her empty pigeonhole beside his desk. "I wasn't expecting anything," she told him truthfully. But he was determined to regard the lack of post as a confirmation of her low status and as a triumph for himself. It was lunchtime, and Miss Agnew was seated at a table in the window of a small vegetarian restaurant that suited her herbivorous taste, ruminating over a piece of leek flan. She had managed, by taking very small mouthfuls and laying down her knife and fork between each bite, to prolong her meal for 20 minutes or so. Suddenly, she saw Miss Fitzgerald pass. Her head was bowed against the wind to avoid the spume of salty vinegar being flung back into her face by the northeaster from what was undoubtedly someone else's discarded bag of chips. Miss Agnew had been thinking about Beachy Head. It was comforting to know that it was there. When she'd walked there in the summer, she'd been dazzled by the colour of the sea, opal and sapphire as in Hardy's poem. She'd felt a powerful force pulling her to the cliff's edge, and only the thought that she would probably plummet messily into the boiling rocks rather than curve like a shining bird through the sky into the iridescent sea had propelled her backwards on the turf. She wondered how largely Beachy Head loomed in the minds of her fellow residents. Now she gulped down her elderberry wine, paid the bill, and succumbed to an impulse to follow Miss Fitzgerald. She felt amused at herself as she turned up the collar of her mac, like one of the private eyes in her detective stories. Stories that she used as a drug against insomnia, when she lay awake in the night and felt the hotel slip from its stone moorings and nose towards oblivion. Hotel gossip had it that Miss Fitzgerald, despite her rags and carrier bags, was very rich. Any discussion of her eccentricities would include, at some point, the refrain, "She comes of a very good family, you know." The black sheep, driven from some half-ruined Anglo-Irish castle, Miss Agnew surmised as she hurried along, merging into the wall whenever Miss Fitzgerald stopped to investigate a litter bin. They emerged into the long road called Seaside, and Miss Agnew found herself studying a set of ruby-red plastic tumblers in the window of a junk shop, while Miss Fitzgerald contracted some business with its proprietor. A sign stuck to the glass said, "Lloyd Loom chairs wanted, any condition, good prices paid." How odd, thought Miss Agnew, that those prosaic wicker chairs should have become collector's items. If you waited long enough, everything came back into fashion. But she knew that she would not. Not yet antique, and certainly unfashionable. She stepped into an adjacent shop doorway as Miss Fitzgerald emerged, still talking volubly and stuffing something into one of her plastic carriers. Miss Agnew remembered that there was a creaking circle of green wicker chairs in the hotel conservatory, which she felt suddenly sure were genuine Lloyd Looms. Miss Fitzgerald crossed the road and stood at the bus stop. But Miss Agnew decided to walk on a little before retreating to the Blair Athol, although a heavy shower had started to fall. This part of the town seemed to be called Roselands. There was a men's club of that name and a cafe. The name shimmered softly in tremulous green leaves and pink blousy petals, the name of a ballroom or dance hall in a film where the lost and lonely waltzed away their afternoons, reflected in mirrors, full of echoes and regret. Eventually Miss Agnew caught a bus back to the town centre and sat on its upper deck. She closed her ears to the profanities of a bunch of smoking schoolchildren sprawling at the back. Their harsh cries sounded as sad as the voices of seabirds on a deserted beach at dusk. As she stepped out of the lift on the fourth floor, she noticed a pram belonging to one of the bed and breakfast families wedged across the narrow stair that led to their quarters. And she saw the disappearing, draggled hem of a sari above a pair of men's socks. She shook out the raindrops from her mac and hung it up and made herself a cup of soup and a piece of toast. Later that evening, she went down to the conservatory to watch the 9 o'clock news. "Pull the door to, would you?" said Mrs. McConaughey. "There's a draught." The wind was buffeting the glass panes. The television picture shivered. "I don't want to be part of this," Miss Agnew said to herself, looking round. At the Crosby twins, counting stitches. At the defeated fan of playing cards in Mrs. McConaughey's hand. At Mr. Cable, clawing his winnings across the baize table, whose legs were crisscrossed with black insulating tape. Wicker creaked under old bones. The horizontal hold slipped, and Miss Fitzgerald fidgeted under a cashmere shawl. "I don't want to be a drinker of cup of soup in a decaying hotel room where the only post is catalogues for thermal underwear, just as I do not want to join the respectable army of pensioners whose hair is teased at a reduced rate on Wednesdays into white sausages that reveal the vulnerable pink scalps underneath. I'm not nearly ready to sleep easy on a sleep easy mattress. Something's got to happen." The Albanian paused outside the conservatory, then stuck her head round the door. "Good evening, everybody." There was a murmur at this diversion. They glimpsed tangerine chiffon and a dusting of glitter on the blue-black plumes of her hair. She smiled like a dutiful daughter round the circle of her surrogate family. But there was nobody to tell her to take care not to be home late. And she melted away into the mysterious night. "Pull the door to, would you?" called Mrs. McConaughey, wrapping her tartan rug tight around her knees. "There's a draught." "Something must happen," said Miss Agnew to herself again as she prepared herself for bed. "Something will change." In the morning, nothing had changed. A seagull laughed long and bitterly outside her window. Mr. Metallius still disliked her. There was nothing in her pigeonhole. A grey rain was slashing the street. As she crossed the foyer, she passed the Albanian. A poor broken moth caught by the morning, dragging dripping wings of tangerine gauze across the dusty carpet, blue-jawed and sooty-eyed in the fluorescent light. The only thing that was different, she noticed as she entered the conservatory, was that all the Lloyd Loom chairs had gone. And Miss Fitzgerald was standing under a paper parasol in the rain, watching a van pull away from the back entrance of the hotel.